And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
9 seconds remaining. Deep drop. Underwood. 5 seconds left. Underwood's going to toss it towards the end zone. Into the crowd. And out of bounds. Time expires.
And it's done before anybody touches it.
There's 1 second remaining in the game. Third down.
To throw away the hopes of the Broncos. On third down. Deep drop. Going to unload it towards the end zone. Into the crowd. And it's caught. J.J. Buchanan. Touchdown. A miracle at Michigan Stadium.
From the heart of Queens to the ears of sports fans everywhere, this is the Sports Kings from Queens. Strap in because the Kings are in session. Today is Wednesday, September 9th. This is episode 251. I'm Gino, joined by my co-hosts Kevin and Darren. Please catch us wherever you get your podcast. Make sure to like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Give us a look. Join our pages. We'd love to hear from you. Feel free to leave your questions and comments. We'll respond. Tonight, we go around the world of sports a little bit, and then we give you an NFL preview. College football has started. Baseball about 2 weeks away from the playoffs. That's where we're going to get it started. We got about 2 weeks left. Yankees still in second place. Tampa Bay, 86-58. Yankees at 82-62. Second best record in the American League. They're 20 games over, 4 games back. 9 games up in the wild card. Boston right on their tail at 80-66. Listen, no matter what happens, they're going to make the wild card at this point. They got Judge back this week. A little too early for me, by the way. They really didn't even do anything with him. I'm okay to play, and he's basically a day and a half in the batting cage, and he's back on the field.
Yeah,
I don't even know if they made him do running sprints or anything. He's just back out on the field. In the same 3 or 4 day span, Grisham goes on the DL, Jazz goes on the IL. I don't know. Darren?
I mean, listen, this team's going to win with Judge in the lineup being a presence and pitching. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. Again, you know, would love to say that I feel confident in the bullpen outside of Bednar. I don't. Wells starting to hit a little bit, make you feel like he can hit 200. Lombard had a grand slam tonight. First Yankee grand slam of the season, by the way.
Yep.
Which is nice. If he hits, he can pick up a little bit of the slack. You figure Chisholm will be back before the season's out, and he'll be able to play in the postseason. Listen, the Yankees' only chance of winning the division, they're going to have to probably sweep the Rays in that 4-game set in the Bronx. We'll see what happens there. But the Rays just keep winning, and they're winning again tonight in Atlanta. They just keep finding a way. And again, beginning of the season, right, we all sat there and we're like, well, they got Caminero, and they're probably the weakest team in this division, and they've just been the best team in the American League, all season long. There's really not much more to say about it. If everybody's healthy, the Yankees should have enough of a lineup to compete. If everybody's banged up and if Judge doesn't even come back as even a remote part of himself, it's a glaring hole in the middle of that lineup, and the Yankees can be pitched to. That's really what it comes down to.
I'm sorry, Judge has 2.5 weeks of rehab, basically, in the major leagues. That's what it comes
down
to.
That's basically it.
That's what it is. But we all know about his postseason struggle. Except last year he hit for average. Didn't hit for pop, but hit for average. Now we got to see if the Yankees need Judge to be hitting in the playoffs to give them a shot. And by hitting, they need Judge to be Judge, not Judge to be a singles and doubles hitter. Yep. And not to insult what he did last year, it was the best postseason he's had. It just wasn't a good one. But right now, you're not worried about the regular season. They're doing what they're supposed to do against the Rockies. They got the Mets this weekend, which there's a football game on tonight that has 7 points at the half. The Mets have 26 runs in the eighth between them and the Marlins. So, more action on baseball than football right now. And we'll get more into football in a little bit. But, if the rotation's healthy and they can get with everything they can get out of these starters, they have a shot to go very far in the playoffs, Jay. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I agree. I mean, you'd like to see a little bit something out of Judge, in the next couple of weeks here. Just a little bit. let me see a home run or two. Let me see him swing the bat a little bit so that you know that middle of the lineup between Rice and Bellinger and Garcia, you know, Judge is in the middle of that. You know, the pitching looks good right now. The starters look okay. I mean, the bullpen, you're going to complain about it. It is what it is. Bednar, for his ups and downs, is converted 32 out of 35.
He's the only guy I don't complain about.
Hedrick's been good. Blackburn's been good. That's what we're gonna see.
I can't wait to play the Red Sox in game three of that first round and bring Blackburn in with a 1-1 lead in the eighth. I'm gonna go outside and vomit. That's what's gonna happen.
Bednar
went five outs the night before.
In the AL Central, Chicago's got a 2.5 game lead on Cleveland. Houston's got a 2-game lead on Texas in the West. You know, between those four teams, Tampa Bay, the Yankees, and Boston, that's where the playoff teams will come out of in some fashion.
The Guardians have made a little bit of a run here at the White Sox, so we'll see what happens. Texas and Houston could go either way, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, other than that, you know, Boston's, you know, three games out, and then everybody else is past that point. You know, Toronto's one game out, and that's basically it at this point.
It's just the Padres versus the Diamondbacks. They're dead heat right now.
Right.
That's the last spot. Every other spot seems to be pretty well sewn up.
Baltimore lost 7 of the last 10. That took them out of the running.
But Blue Jays lost today, but they're still hanging around.
Yep.
Blue Jays, Rangers, trying to catch the Guardians there.
Yep. National League, Darren, you just said it. You know, it looks like it's Arizona and San Diego fighting for that last spot at this point.
I mean, I'm a Padre fan, but big credit to the Diamondbacks after that whole Ketel Marte fiasco for them to kind of recircle the wagon, so to speak, to use the Chris Berman football term, and get this team back on track. I think it was a great job by the Diamondbacks and Tori Lavullo on this one.
Kev, you want to touch on the Mets real quick?
Hey, they moved out of last place. Yay. this weekend, I mean, it should be exciting. It should be an incredible scene Friday night. 25th anniversary, 9/11, playing the Yankees in New York in the Bronx.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm sure the pregame stuff is going to be amazing to watch and very emotional. And I expect both teams to do a real good job on that Friday night. And for the series itself, I mean, you've got, was it lined up here? I just had it up. Rodon, Cole, and Schlittler versus McClain, Thornton, and Scott.
As good as it's going to get.
I mean, for the Mets side, that's the three best pitchers they have right now. For the Yankees, I mean, you know, maybe, unless you think Freed should be in there, that's your top three probably. So, should be a fun series. And then after that, the Mets welcome in the aforementioned Baltimore Orioles, and Pete Alonso's return to Citi Field. Woohoo!
You should explode.
I think David Stern should be getting a few boos there.
No doubt.
Well, that's about it for the Mets. I mean, they're playing well, fun to watch, and, you know, 2 weeks left.
Darren?
Just a quick point, more on 9/11 than anything else, because when you break it down, right, Gino and I were born in 71, Kev was born in 69. So, you know, the kids that are born today are the same distance from 9/11 as basically we were born from the end of World War II.
Wow.
It's right? I mean, World War II seemed so long ago when we were born. So the kids today don't understand the amazing heroism of that day, the tragedy and the heroism of that day of New York's finest and New York's bravest, and they should always – and so many people in the city just doing everything they could to help. And I just hope for the younger people that listen to us that may not have witnessed it like we did and understand it, it's – It is an emotional, exciting, you know, day that day. It's going to be exciting in the Bronx to see what goes on with these two teams who paid such homage to the heroes in New York City in particular. And I remember, you know, Piazza hit the home run off Steve Carsey, right? Yep. I mean, you know, college point
the
zone.
Queens kid, yeah.
Right? Bush comes out to throw the first pitch at Yankee Stadium. Gita sees him underneath the stadium and says, hey, don't bounce it. They'll boo you. He's sitting there trying to throw a pitch with a vest on, with a bulletproof vest on. He threw a strike. It was an emotional day when baseball first came back. It was the only time in our lives where there was no strike, yet we had a little bit of a delay on sports, which, you know, seemed like the right thing to do, and then everybody was ready for it to come back. And, you know, again, just it'll be an emotional scene on Friday night. Sorry, yep. I don't mean to go on a tangent. Sorry, guys.
Nope, that's okay. Kev, I want to just touch on one thing. Carson Benj.
Yeah.
Right? What do you think his potential upside is here? So you've seen what he can do. He's basically going to have a full season of at-bats here. What's the upside with him?
I think he's going to be a consistent 2020 guy.
Okay.
Good year, 25. Maybe he can get to 25 to 30 home runs in the full season. Okay. Bat 280 to 300.
Who's his comp? Who's his major league comp? You're welcome for that question.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, I got it because that's exactly what I looked up. It's Jake McCarthy.
I think he's better than Jake McCarthy.
Well, that's the numbers.
I get it. I just think he's better. I'd rather go with a...
Jake McCarthy is 20 to 25 with 30 stolen bases, hitting 275 to 285.
I was going to say Marquise Grissom.
No. Ooh.
I think he's got the speed. I think he's got the pop.
Nope.
I think he's got the arm.
He's got an arm in the right field, my goodness.
I don't know that he's that good of an offensive player.
I think he is, but time's going to tell, right?
Okay.
I mean, it's not like I just a disagreement.
I looked for an acceptable comp based on his numbers right now, and it was Jake McCarthy.
Yep.
And that's why I asked. I was just trying to figure out where Kev thought his upside lied. So, all right, we can get back into that. Kev, you got some hidden gems for us?
Yep. Start with one. I'm sorry, Gino. Jacob Webb of the Chicago Cubs. His last three save opportunities, two-run walk-off home runs with two outs in the ninth, and a two-run game-tying home run with two outs in the ninth. First guy to do that since saves became an official stat in 1969. Jacob Webb not doing really well right now. Sorry, G. Ronald Acuna last week hit a home run against the Phillies, which gave him 1,000 career hits to go with 200 home runs and 200 steals. Only one other Braves player has ever reached those three milestones. 1,000 hits, 200 home runs, 200 steals. One other Braves player. Any guesses?
Dale Murphy?
No.
I didn't think he stole 200 bases, but I was throwing it out there anyway. Andrew Jones?
Nope. I looked at it. Should I have stolen bases also?
Really? Okay.
Yep.
Wow. Okay.
Chipper?
No.
No, Chipper didn't run, did he? Maybe. I mean, but
early in his career, he did.
Yeah, but he stopped. As he
I don't know. You got me.
Some guy named Hank Aaron.
Holy oh, God.
You know what? It makes all the sense in the world as a rook. As a young player, he stole a lot of bases. You're right.
Yep. And one last baseball gem. Two teams this year have 10 players with at least 10 home runs this season. Only two teams have 10 players with double-digit home runs. Who are they?
Two teams have 10
players. With
the Red Sox, one of them?
Nope.
Two teams have 10
players. The Mets are one.
The Mets are one.
With at least 10 home runs.
Is it the White Sox?
No.
Is it another National League team?
Nope, American League team.
It's not the Yankees.
It's the Yankees.
It is. I wouldn't have guessed it. I thought the Mets were a lock. I thought the White Sox hit home runs left and right.
The Mets and Yankees are the only two teams with 10 guys with double-digit home runs.
Oh my gosh.
All right. Wow. Start my gems with college football season. I'm going to add an obscure game of the week.
Okay.
I look forward to it.
FCS, Division II, Division III, more than likely. So this week we're coming from Searcy, Arkansas, the Division II matchup between the Hardin University Bisons and the Northwestern Oklahoma State Rangers.
Okay.
Harding's got a pennant for them hanging in his room.
Harding wins 76-0.
God.
Game ends with 13:15 left in the fourth quarter. They finally said, all right, we've had enough. 76-0, we're done. 747 yards for Harding University. We've seen big, gaudy numbers like that, right?
Yeah.
Northwestern Oklahoma State passing went 5-for-13 for 5 yards. They averaged 1 yard per pass.
That's hard to do.
They rushed. Their rushing numbers, I'm talking running backs running the ball, 16 carries for 23 yards. You throw in 6 sacks for negative 54 yards. That's 22 rushes for negative 31 yards. That gives them a total of negative 26 yards of total offense. They had 0 first downs. They had 11 three and outs, 1 drive end on an interception on the second play.
Oh my
Probably the God. Most inept offense I have ever seen. Congratulations, Northwestern Oklahoma State. No first downs in the game.
So, Kev, I have to keep between the three of us, we have to keep looking to see if they win a game this year.
We will.
I just think it's worth.
I want to see them get
if they score a point, let alone win a game.
How about a first down?
Yeah, I mean, we'll take a first down. I want to see them score a point. If they get a touchdown all season, it'll be exciting with that kind of offensive performance. Yes. Unless Hardy is just an amazing D2 program that I'm not familiar with, which they could be.
It could be. Who knows?
It could be Ohio State. It could be the Ohio State of D2 this year. I don't know.
Yep.
Or Texas, whichever way you're leaning this year.
Wow.
All right. So, college football.
Kev, listen, we actually got some pretty good games last week. And we're going to get to the most controversial game in a second. Game of the week had to be Ole Miss Louisville, Kev. Had to be Ole Miss Louisville.
Oh, this was, wonderful game.
And I ended up leaving this game more impressed with the loser than the winner, and I'm not trying to take anything away from Ole Miss, but when Ole Miss went up 38-24 after a horrible roughing the kicker call.
Yes.
Horrible. If you looked at a picture of a definition in the dictionary of running into the kicker, that was it. He ran into the guy as he was standing there. It was not a rough, but they gave him the rough, and there was a few controversial calls all weekend long, and we'll get into a couple others. But, Ole Miss goes up 38-24, and Kienholz leads Louisville back and in impressive fashion, Kev.
Well, I thought for sure when I'm losing my train of thought here. When Louisville used up all their timeouts in the third quarter.
Yeah, they did.
And they were down 2 touchdowns with 6 minutes left. I thought there was no way. The only thing Ole Miss couldn't do is give up the big play. And what did they do? Did. They gave up big play after big play. And Louisville got the 2 touchdowns in the last 6 minutes with no timeouts helping them out.
Did you have a problem with them going for one with a minute and change to go with no timeouts? Because I didn't, but I'm asking you.
No, I didn't. The way that game is going back and forth, I probably would take a chance and try to get into overtime.
Gee, did you have a thought on that one?
No. Either way, I mean,
at the end of the game, I think I would have went for two, but there was a minute and change left. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Gee.
Kev.
Yeah, I think like you said, with last play of the game, yeah, maybe I do. But I thought there was still a little bit of time left. I want to make sure I've got a chance to get into overtime.
I'll say this about this game.
If I was in Ole Miss, maybe I have a different thought about it as well. This is a neutral field in Nashville, I believe.
Yep. Nashville. Trinidad Chambliss throws as nice a deep ball as I've seen. Everything seems to be in stride. There was a play that they missed. Deuce Alexander on a second touchdown. He dropped the ball before it crossed the goal line. I don't know what the obsession is in college and pro football of having to drop the ball the second you cross the goal line. Go 3 yards in, Gino. This is a joke. I don't understand how these guys can't do it. It drives me crazy. I had no dog in the fight. I just wanted to see a good game. This guy drops it before he gets in. They don't call it.
Hand the ball to the referee.
It's not that hard. It's not that hard. Lincoln Kienholz was a little off in the first half, but he missed a wide-open receiver for a touchdown. The game was 10-6 at the half. They put up 63 points combined in the second half. The offense has clicked in. Deuce Alexander was uncoverable, basically. And Louisville was able to get big plays, too. I think Louisville has, with this loss, in my opinion, they put themselves as the number two team in the ACC and the team that could give Miami a little bit of trouble, in my opinion.
More impressed? I think it's still going to be four teams battling out there.
No, I'm not saying SMU's out. I'm not saying that any of the other teams are out. But I saw from Louisville impressed me except for pass defense. And I think they're going to – Jeff Brohm will have to get that thing sewn up a little bit.
Yep.
So one that was supposed to be the biggest game of the weekend, worst loss in Dabo's history. And, you know, Kev, LSU 51 Clemson – you know, you can't even get into it. They scored their touchdown at the end of the game, basically, when it was over. 51-10 final.
That game was over so early. LSU just dominated both sides of the ball. Vezina just looked awful. And, yeah. You know, it didn't matter what happened in the second half. I mean, the way they came out and LSU just piled the nine right from the start. It was a very – just incredibly impressive by LSU to basically shove up everybody's, you know what, you know, to say, where else? We don't need pros.
I mean, listen, he's still a prick, but you know what?
No, he is.
He got 309 yards rushing against a Clemson defense, 644 total yards in this game, led 31-3 at the half after giving up the first 3 points. Sam Leavitt looks like the real deal. Is this the last year for Dabo? Is this the last hurrah? I mean, this is – he's got to either circle the wagons quick and get this team turned around, or they're not going to be able to compete with teams like Pittsburgh, Syracuse, that are putting up record numbers offense against lesser competition. But they showed Vezina, they showed they can't put up points.
Yeah. Like I said, so it's been a few years now with Dabo. He was finally starting to get into the transfer portal this year. But it's been a couple of years now with Clemson on the slide, and he's got to fix this real quick. They can't. He can't afford another 6-7, 7-6 type of year.
I agree. I mean, I think this will be the last year if they don't figure out a way to turn around, at least get 9 wins for the guy.
Yep.
Another game, just real quick, Notre Dame, Wisconsin. Irish had a battle for a half, and then, you know, they turned on the Jets. I don't know if that means that Wisconsin is better than we thought or if Notre Dame just need a little time to get it revved up. I think time will tell, but Notre Dame really kicked it into gear in the second half, Kev.
Time will tell, but I think it was a little bit more Notre Dame. Took some time, finally kicked it into gear and pulled away, made it easy in the second half.
Before Sunday night, the game of the week was Oregon-Boise State.
Yes, it was.
That game was ridiculous. Again, I'm going to say this, very impressed with the team that lost this game.
Yep.
You know, I mean, Boise right now, and they play Memphis in what we like to call, as old wrestling fans, as a lose-or-leave-town match this weekend and for that fifth G5 spot, because if Boise loses a second game, it makes it a little harder. Memphis already has the win over UNLV. But I was really impressed with Maddox Madsen, and I thought Dante Moore was a little off in the first half, but then you look at the stats at the end of the game. It's 378 with 3 scores, completes about 80% of his passes. He did a lot right, Kev.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the total offense, they had almost 500 yards of offense. I mean, Boise State didn't have 300. I mean, it's amazing that Boise State just managed to keep this game close somehow. And, you know, Oregon didn't turn the ball over.
Nope.
Boise just made enough plays to keep it close, keep them in it. And Oregon, you know, that offense looked so damn good.
I mean, the touchdown by Dakarian Moore at the end of the game to give him the lead, 34-27. He's got two guys on him. He stops on a dime. They run into each other, and he just basically walks in. The Ducks, listen, both teams are good. You know, I thought that Boise State did a nice job running the ball to keep themselves in it. They weren't getting a lot per carry, but they kept a good Oregon defense off balance all game till the last two drives when Oregon's defense stepped up when they had to, found a way to win it. And then there's only one game, really, that is probably the most embarrassing game you'll ever watch. What you think? No, I know we're going to talk about multiple, but okay. But I understand that you want to talk about more, but I'm just saying, in the big games with real teams in them.
Yep.
Not to insult the other. But Michigan, Western Michigan. If this isn't a robbery, I don't know what is. The clocks are synced. They're not synced. It says zero on my screen, but it really wasn't. What are we doing here?
We have this super secret clock that shows 1 second that the officials or replay officials are looking at, apparently. Who knows what the hell is going on? All I know is that we've always gone by the scoreboard clock.
Exactly.
The officials please reset the clock to 9 seconds. So everybody was set at 9 seconds before that play. And so all of a sudden, you look up and there's zeros. I think NBC's showing the scoreboard clock in the corner that shows it going to zero. Their clock in the score there shows it to zero. I don't know what they were looking at. I have no idea how they were able to give Michigan another play on that play.
I mean, listen, Michigan executed that other play. They great. Did. In hindsight, I'm saying to myself, I'm like, how did they not have somebody running alongside the tall receiver? They all played in the back because, Bryce threw it out of the end zone in the first throw, so they probably thought it was going to be deep again. This time he threw it short to the end zone. It was an easy catch.
He ran back about 10 yards further, launched it. So I think that got him to the goal line rather than to the end line.
And again, Underwood had three turnovers. Western Michigan had the ball for 40 minutes in this game. They led 12-7. They couldn't punch it in.
I mean, they had that one huge drive. What, 20 plays?
Yeah, absolutely.
13, 14 minutes. I mean, Western Michigan, unfortunately, they could not punch it in. They had four field goals, but they dominated that game. They physically dominated Michigan.
Lance Taylor, I mean, give him credit for taking the high road after the game, and he'll be coaching somewhere else in a Power Four conference next year for what he's done with Western Michigan. Bryce Underwood probably is the biggest NIL mistake I've ever seen. He didn't have it last year, and in week one he turns it over three times. They paid a ton of money to steal him from Alabama. This kid has not progressed.
No.
At all. I mean, listen, he could turn it around second half of this year. He could really get things going. But this is Western Michigan, a power team of the MAC, but it's not exactly like you're playing Power Four conference teams here. And you're not going to get away with that kind of crap against Oklahoma this week. I know you're home. It's not going to get away with that crap against Oklahoma.
Nope.
Kev, there was one game that stood out to you this week, Kev.
UMass and Rutgers.
Why not? First game of the weekend, really. Why not? Let's go with first team game that hadn't won in 2 years. Why not? Let's go with them.
Yeah. I was ready to just rip Rutgers, and you look at this past Thursday night, whichever the game was, 37-21 UMass. UMass had broke a 16-game losing streak. They've been in the FBS since 2012. Out of the other 120 teams that have played since 2012, UMass has the worst winning percentage, 163. They've won 26 games since going to the FBS. And you look at their versus other FBS schools, they're 19-129. That's a 128 winning percentage. And Rutgers loses to this team. That's embarrassing. That the first win for UMass is against a Power Conference team as well. So it's got to leave it at that. But then you read about what's happening Friday night. So they're playing at BC Friday night. Another 9-11 game.
Yep.
Game's on ESPN2. Rutgers is coming out. They're wearing their white helmets with number 37 emblazoned on the helmets to signify their 37 alumni that lost their lives on 9-11. And then they'll have things like the piping on their uniforms. They'll say, never forget. Mm-hmm. BC is playing their annual Red Bandana Day game. Anniversary of 9-11. If you don't know the Red Bandana, so there's a volunteer firefighter from NIAC, went to BC. Wells Crowther is the guy's name. He wore a red bandana from when he was a kid. He wore that. He went down to the towers that morning as a volunteer firefighter. Up and down the stairs, I don't know how many times they put a number of about 18 people he helped get out before he himself lost his life. So what they do on this Red Bandana Day is they put the design into their helmets, their jersey numbers, and their pinstripes. And just to add a little something to it, a couple of days before the 25th anniversary, Trump did award him the Presidential Medal of Freedom, posthumously, of course, gave it to his family. So that ceremony was held Tuesday. So if you get a chance, you're watching Yankees Mets, but maybe early on, flip over, maybe catch the last couple of minutes before the game, see what they're doing special on that Rutgers BC game on Friday night on ESPN2. Again, remembering 9-11 from both squads. That's got to be a really special night as well.
Might be the only reason to watch two bad teams play football. But you know what?
Good job, Kev.
It's an amazing story. It's an amazing story.
Yep. Then that gets us into the rest of the week, right, Dan?
Well, yeah, just a couple of real quick things from last week, and then we're going to go right into this week. Two other embarrassing games. Idaho State beats Utah State. FCS beats FBS. Should never happen. Beat them relatively handily. Tulsa beats Oklahoma State. Rivalry game. Everybody's looking at Oklahoma State to rise up. Tulsa beat them 24-10. Spread, they were getting 13.5. When you commit four turnovers, this is what happens. Colorado beats Georgia Tech in really just an ugly, horrible game, 14-13. Georgia Tech gets the field goal blocked at the end. Colorado rushes the field, primes 1-0. Auburn 17-16 over Baylor. This was a pretty even game, combined for five turnovers. These teams are not very good. Baylor scores late, Kev. They go for two. They score at the 9 seconds left. Any problem with it?
Again, now you're getting into that last play of the game. You go for it.
I agree.
The momentum there. You go for it.
DJ Lagway, who underperformed at Florida, had the guy open in the flat as tight end. He threw it behind him, wrong shoulder. By the time he turned around, he got tackled at like the quarter-yard line. He was open. If he leads him, it's a touchdown. Real quick, UCLA pulled away from Cal. The Bob Chesney era gets off to a good start. Mississippi State, team I told you guys to watch when we're doing the SEC preview real quick. They beat Louisiana Monroe 62-13. Doesn't mean anything. 762 total yards for Mississippi State. That was the highest number I saw all weekend. And Vatek, 73. VMI, 3. James Franklin era at the, you know, Enter Sandman. I know it's no sandstorm to you, but Enter Sandman at Lane Stadium is huge. So that's a fun one, too. Pittsburgh beats Ball State. Mason Heinschel, 31 for 41, 453 in the ACC record, 7 touchdowns. Now we get into this week, Kev.
And locally, Army 59, Bryant 3. If this sets up the season, 57 carries, 570 yards rushing for Army.
Ran it right down their throat. I don't consider by the way,
Bryant's a pushover, but
no, I know still a lot of rushing yards. Mets hold on 15-14 and
yes.
A good pitch. I just figured that was important to share. So now we go into this week, Kev. And the game of the week is Texas-Ohio State. But there's a few others that we were looking at as well, Kev.
Yeah, I mean, no other ranked versus ranked games.
No, not really.
There are a couple of other ones. Yep. Missouri at Kansas, I think, is interesting.
It certainly is.
Oh, get to that in a minute. Arizona at BYU. Chance for Arizona to show if they have anything this year. I think that's – I mean, BYU's favored by a touchdown. But like I said, big early test for Arizona. You've got the Cyhawk, Iowa State.
Always a big game. They don't like each other.
Texas A&M at home versus Arizona State, if you want to go down to that level. Alabama
Listen,
and Kentucky.
Kenny Dillingham has done a good job at Arizona State. You never count them out of anything.
Yep. And then the other one that, you know, all of a sudden becomes ranked versus unranked is Oklahoma at Michigan.
Crazy.
Because Michigan wins and falls from 16th to out of the rankings.
They embarrass themselves. Everybody knows they lost. Yep. And, you know, that one. And the other one I'm looking at, SEC starts up Alabama at Kentucky. You expect Alabama to win. But, you know, it's still a road game in the SEC for a freshman quarterback. So we'll see what happens. Duke, Illinois, Mississippi State, Minnesota. Just big conference teams playing each other always makes it a little bit interesting. But let's get to the big one, Kev. We get Texas. We get Ohio State. Last year they played a close one in Columbus. Now we go to Austin for this one.
It was in the shoe last year. It was Archer's first game as a full-time starter, and he crapped the bed, to put it bluntly. He did nothing the whole game. Ohio State's defense, I mean, you could tell Arch was overwhelmed, to put it mildly, by the atmosphere in the shoe. He improved as the season went on, and this is a chance for him at home this time to take it to Ohio State. And, you know, we know how good Ohio State is. They're obviously number one for a reason. They return a hell of a lot of talent. Julian Sands back at quarterback. You know, obviously, no doubt about it, game of the week, right, Darren?
It's 1-4. The home team's favored by a point and a half in this one. You get two quarterbacks. Arch is going to go in the draft this year. Saying probably waits one more year. But who's covering Jeremiah Smith? Who's covering Cam Coleman on the other side? Wingo also. so much talent at the receiver positions, solid running backs, good defenses, good coaches. This is as good an early matchup. You don't expect to see these games scheduled anymore. And here we are with this one. Geno, the Longhorns laying 1.5 at home against the Buckeyes. 4-1. Who gets away with this one, Jay?
Well, listen, Kev said it, right? Manning was a deer in the headlights against the Buckeyes last season, right? It was a lot to ask first game as Texas full-time starter last year. But now he's a seasoned vet. Plenty of experience against a quality competition. He's under the lights in Austin. I think Texas pulls this one out in a close game. Give me Texas, 30-27. So Texas covers -1. Kev?
Yeah, I'm on board with Geno there. Everything you say, I think, you know, Ohio State had the benefit of being home last year. I think Texas gets the benefit of being home this year. I mean, 1.5 is all it is. I'm thinking Texas, you know, I've got that 31-27, 34-31 type of score as well. I see Texas pulling this out by a field goal.
I'm going the other way, boys. I think Ohio State's better. I think they're just a little bit better. I trust Saiyan more than I trust Arch. I think that Ohio State wins outright. I don't need your 1.5, but I'll take it. 20-16, I say Texas wins it. A little more low scoring than you guys have it.
Wow. Okay.
I think the defenses are going to play really well in this matchup. I think it's a nip and tuck game. I think it comes down to the end, but I think Ohio State finds a way to pull it out. I think it's a thriller. Gee, where are we going for game two for you this week?
Game two. I'm thinking Utah at home. -11.5. Consistently becoming one of the best defenses in the Big 12. Throwing a huge home field advantage for the Utes at night this week. I think they make a statement against the SEC. I know it's not one of the big teams, Arkansas, but they're making a little statement against the SEC, and they cover the spread. Give me Utah. Cover the spread against Arkansas. 11.5.
Okay.
Darren?
Okay, I'll go second. Sure. I'm going to take Illinois laying 6 against Duke at home. I think Illinois is just a little bit better than Duke. Duke struggled a little bit last week against Tulane. I think there's a lot of change. I think Manny Diaz is a good coach. I just think that, you know, that a lot of changes at Duke. I think Illinois is just a little bit more powerful. I think that the Fighting Illini fight through and get the win this week. Kev?
I'm going to stick SEC, game I mentioned already. I like Missouri only laying 5.5 at Kansas. I think Missouri's just a better team than Kansas, and I think they cover by winning by about 10 points easily. So I'll take Missouri -5.5, even though it's on the road.
Gee, where are you going round three?
Round three. I'm taking Tennessee -12.5 at Georgia Tech. 5-star freshman quarterback Faison Brandon continues his stellar start after racking up 5 touchdowns versus Furman last week. I think he gets 4 more this week. Tennessee dominates the line versus Georgia Tech. Give me Tennessee big. I don't know, like 49-13. Give me Tennessee -12.5. Kev, where you going?
Torn between which SEC team to take. I'm gonna go Alabama laying the 10.5 at Kentucky. I know it's a true freshman, first road test. I think Alabama is going to run the ball a lot better this year in general. And I think Alabama is going to find a way to beat Kentucky by about 17. Give me them a 31-14 type score for Alabama.
All right, Kev, we're going head-to-head. I'm taking Kentucky.
There you go.
In the game, but I think Kentucky loses in a close one. I think this one will be like, I don't know, let's say 24-20. Alabama wins it. I think Kentucky covers it. I think the kid actually brings him back from behind and starts his little momentum off of this game, but I don't think he does it in the impressive fashion that you do. I think there that Kentucky go. Covers it. I did like Missouri, by the way, on the other side of it, but I'm going to go with Kentucky. So we'll go head-to-head in this one.
If gun to your head, Oklahoma, Michigan.
I think Oklahoma beats them. I think they're better. I think that Oklahoma has too much firepower for Michigan's offense. And I think if Western Michigan was able to control the clock like that, I think Oklahoma can easily do it as well. I don't think it's going to be a blowout by any stretch. I think Michigan will battle them. But I'd say Oklahoma wins by 10.
The only thing I'm worried about, I was leaning towards Oklahoma, obviously, as my other school. I was just, you know, worried from a Benny perspective that Michigan was going to come out ready to tell everybody, F you, we are better than this. We won last week, I don't care what you say, and we're going to prove it this week.
I can see that happening, by the way, so there you go.
All right. Gary, got some buried treasures?
A couple of buried treasures for you guys. We'll start with NFL one for you guys here. So, actually, no, I'm going to start with a baseball one. You know, forget it. Okay, 8 players in baseball history have had 300 homers and 300 stolen bases for their careers. All guys you know, some of them will surprise you. 8 in history.
Aaron.
Hank Aaron.
Ricky.
Not on the list.
Oh.
Ricky.
Not on the list. Didn't hit 300 homers, just short.
Barry Bonds.
Yep, Barry Bonds is one. Actually, I'm sorry. Yeah, Barry Bonds is one.
Bobby Bonds one of them too, then?
Two. Same team, mentioned. By the way. Same team. Think of a superstar. The greatest giant of all time, perhaps.
Willie Mays.
Willie Mays.
There you go. Three.
Kenny Lofton.
Kenny Lofton did not do it.
Okay.
Think of a guy that was...
Jesus.
Biggio.
Biggio did not do it. Very popular wrong answer. Think of a guy that was a superstar for the Mariners, then came to the Rangers, then the Yankees.
Oh, A-Rod.
A-Rod's four. Think of a guy that you remember more from the bat on the shoulder for strike three than anything else.
The recent inductee into the Hall of Fame, Carlos Beltran.
There's five. Think of the guy that got hit in the face by Eric Schau as he dove into a pitch that wasn't that far off the plate. Played for the Cubs, had a record year that year. Nicknamed the Hawk.
Oh, Dawson.
And here are the two I didn't expect, okay? Steve Finley and Reggie Sanders.
Reggie Sanders.
Wow. Oh,
Reggie Sanders finished with 305 homers, 304 stolen bases, 1,666 hits, 341 doubles, and 983 ribbies. Played for 8 teams, won a World Series with the Diamondbacks, and had a rare power speed thing that we would never think of. At least Finley, you say, I guess. But yeah. Reggie Sanders blew me away. Both of them blew me away. So very, very interesting.
Oh, my God.
And just a weird one, right? So 1985, Yogi Berra agrees to manage the Yankees. We all remember this, right? One condition, George can't fire me. 16 games in, George fires him, right? So he doesn't go back. So the man that wins 10 World Series is not welcome back. Won't go back to the stadium. Talked to his son like later in his life. His dad watched every Yankee game at home, and he rooted for the Yankees but refused to go back until he was apologized to. People kept trying to fix it. Friends, executives, nothing worked. And then George would never make the call to him. And then in January of 99, Steinbrenner got on a plane from Florida, drove out to the small museum in Little Falls, New Jersey, sat down with Yogi and his wife, Carmen, and he said plainly, I didn't realize how much I'd screwed up. It was a monumental mistake on my part. Yogi is a principled man. I messed up. I made the worst mistake I ever in all my baseball years. And he admitted that the reason why he went was because Joe DiMaggio, before he died, said, you got to get Yogi back. So DiMaggio forced this to happen. Berra's answer took 10 seconds. It's over. 14 years is long enough. I forgive you, George. Don't worry about it. I've made a lot of mistakes in my baseball life, too. And then, you know, so then they had a 45-minute meeting. On July 18, 1999, the Yankees held Yogi Berra Day. He rode into the stadium, vintage convertible, coat and tie, grinning. Don Lawson threw out the first pitch, right, if you remember that correctly.
Yep.
The same way he caught the game winner in the World Series of 56. And then the starting pitcher that afternoon was David Cone. Before the game, he asked Lawson if he'd run out and jump into Yogi's arms to recreate the photo. Lawson corrected him, said, Yogi jumped into my arms. Then Cone went out and threw a perfect game. I'm just saying. Very, very cool.
I can't remember if that was Cone's or Wells.
It was Cone's perfect game. I just thought it was great. Last one's a football one. You know where the term sack came from? Deacon Jones. Yep. He widely credited with inventing the football term the sack. Jones said taking down a quarterback was like sacking and devastating a city. And the term eventually became part of football vocabulary. Deacon dominated quarterbacks before sacks were even an official stat. Jones literally named the pass rush's greatest accomplishment. And those are my three buried treasures.
Wow.
You got Deacon Jones, though. You would have had that. You were close on it.
Yeah.
I think you would have had that one. I rushed it on you. I should have given you more time to guess. Sorry about that. But I love the Reggie Sanders story, because there was no way I would have thought of him as somebody special.
All right.
Okay, so we have a football episode to do, but we're going to wrap this episode up and go into that as its own episode. But Kev's got a couple of points, one on the U.S. Open, and then I want to bring up one hockey point.
U.S. Open. So we do have a guarantee of American male in the finals. Francis Tiafoe defeated Alex Mickelson, the fellow American, 7-6, 10-8 in the tiebreak in the fifth set, 4 hours and 38 minutes. Mickelson actually served for the match at 5-4 in the third, had two double faults in that game, and then he led 3-0 in the fifth before Tiafoe came back. So that was the first match, 7 o'clock start, so that ends sometime after 11 o'clock. And still to come, Ben Shelton, takes on Carlos Alcaraz.
Ken's a big country fan, if you don't know.
And another five-setter. Shelton wins 7-6, 10-7 in the fifth set tiebreak in 4 hours and 28 minutes. This match ended at 3:33 in the morning because they started after midnight. They've got two men's matches that took over 9 hours combined. They will meet, appropriately enough, Friday, 9/11. The winner to the finals on the 13th on Sunday.
That's awesome.
The U.S. Open has to do something about this. They can't have two men's big-time men's matches scheduled on a nice session.
And starting at 7 o'clock at night, there's no chance. The men's game is just too long a game now.
What you do is you schedule a women's match first, one of the prime ones. Schedule them first. They're going at most 2 hours, more than likely an hour. And then you bring out the men's main event. And
I start the night session at 6. Rather than 12 to 7 and 7 till like midnight, as they say, why not 12 to 6 and 6 to midnight? I don't understand why that hour can't be.
Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous.
The people that are going to U.S. Open are going to go there early anyway. Same point, though, with the women. We got two women in the semifinals not playing each other.
Yeah. This one we got 1-4, 2-3. Because the U.S. tennis has got to do the draw, so they can't have just 1-4, 2-3.
God forbid it's ever even.
1-3, Sabalenka plays the American Pegula, and on the other side, the 2-seed Rybakina versus Coco Gauff, the 4-seed. So we've got a chance.
Did Rybakina win? I thought she lost today.
She pulled out the win, so we got 1-2-3-4.
Okay,
four.
She pulled it out. Okay.
Yeah, so we've got the four favorites there. Men's side blew up with Alcaraz out, with Djokovic going out early, and all sorts of injuries. So,
yeah,
so chances of maybe see two. Maybe see two Americans winning the U.S. Open. Winning that.
It would
nice.
Be really nice on the anniversary of 9/11 here in New York. Yep. 25 years. It'd be really, really cool. Last little point we're going to make, Barry Melrose passed away today at the age of 70. Listen, Barry Melrose brought a lot of fun to announcing in hockey on the American side. Don Cherry owns it for Canada and did for all those years and was great and controversial. Barry Melrose wasn't quite as controversial, but he was that one pundit that really liked the physical stuff, really liked seeing the scraps, the things that the fans liked back in the day when ESPN was covering a lot of playoff hockey. And, he coached Gretzky, and he was part of that whole L.A. Kings little mini, I wouldn't call it a dynasty because they really win that much, but they were good. He was there when Edmonton had to sell Gretzky, which is still something that's hard to imagine. But at the same time, he was just a fun listen and a passionate hockey guy, guys. I enjoyed listening to Barry Melrose.
Melrose and Levy were great together because the two of them loved hockey. But like I said, Melrose, you always think of him with the mullet, of course, those great suits, the white pinstripes, everything else. I mean, but he brought so much fun and so much enjoyment to listen to hockey, whether he was doing the game or more than likely in the studio. Just so much fun to listen to. And, you know, 70 years old, too young.
Too young, absolutely. When I was a kid, I thought 70 was ancient. As it get closer, I don't think so anymore.
Yeah.
That's the way it works. Any other closing points before we wrap up episode 251?
Nope.
We are the Sports Kings from Queens. Darren, Kevin, Gino, talking about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports. A wacky world where the only local Power 4 football team got embarrassed at home. They started on 2 hours before anybody else. So you put it on, and they embarrassed themselves, the Greg Schiano era. So Rutgers is the team I'm talking about. Please download the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, Spotify, TuneIn, whatever you like. You know, listen, we're going to be sharing a lot on social. Football season starting up, baseball players starting up, college football's getting going. This is an exciting time for sports, and we're all over it. But without any further ado, may your sports be with you.